Part 4, Repairs and Investigations. Sinti San, CUA 17, 272 ASC. Wednesday, April 17th, Standard Year 2391. Republic City, Dicho. True to Hayashi Midori's word, the Zipong Foreign Ministry's intelligence apparatus, as well as those of the Ministries of Defense and Commerce, were made available to Dicho's Order of the White Lotus. Together, the Ministries and the White Lotus performed several fact-finding missions into the galaxy beyond, seeking the provenance of the strange events of the last September. While that was going on, Korra performed her own investigations in the spirit world sandwiched in between the two worlds, as well as determining what effects the events there had bled over to the material world. Given that one of the major epicenters of spirit activity was actually in Republic City, Korra didn't need to travel far to get things done. Thanks to the events of the harmonic convergence of 171 ASC, portions of the city had become overgrown with massive spirit vines. The inhabitants of the city, after a period of transition, had learned to live with them and their new spirit neighbors, rearranged the city's zoning districts, and underwent a complete transportation network rebuild to accommodate the unfortunate disruptions. Now, the spirit vines were as much a part of Republic City's infrastructure as the city's power grid and sanitation lines. Most citizens gave them little thought over the course of the day, unless they had some reason to visit the wilds. The wilds themselves had been carefully shaped and arranged over the decades, the vines redistributed instead of destroyed, to make a truly green city, enjoyable by both human and spirit alike. Unfortunately, as with any natural system, there could be the occasional chaotic growth period, overrunning the more structured human construction. Fortunately, the Avatar had long since learned the way to cope with such disruptions and could usually get things fixed in an afternoon. If only there hadn't been so many of them. Korra looked up at the storefront. What had once been a thriving store in the Disciple Wong's Sound City phonograph chain was now doing its best impression of an overgrown florist's shop. Spirit vines had broken through several of the windows and had entwined around the record racks inside. While it was still possible to enter the store, it certainly wasn't doing anything for the consumer experience. "I'm sorry, Avatar, but I'm at my wit's end," the shop owner cried, watching as several puffball and mushroom spirits loitered in the shop. "I don't mind having the spirits there, but the vines, I can't even get into the back room anymore." Korra studied the scene, a slight frown crossing her features. "And you say the Department of Spirits tried to move the vines earlier?" The shopkeeper nodded, the tassel on top of his hat flapping wildly. "They came last month, and the month before that, but the vines just keep coming back." The Avatar sighed and shook her head. "Do I have to take those guys through a refresher spirit-bending course again? Seriously." She muttered under her breath, directing a brief, sidelong glance toward the spirit department water tanker that had accompanied her to the vine disturbance. The driver had the good sense to look abashed at Korra's glare. "Don't worry. I'll take care of this." Shifting into a bending stance, Korra twisted the valves open on the nearby tanker truck. Water flowed out, controlled by her waterbending, and twisted around the vines, suspended in midair. As she shifted her stance, the water began to glow, redirecting the spiritual energy the vines were composed of. Slowly, the vines retracted from the depths of the store, receding into the ground and out of the windows. Continuing her spirit bending, Korra shifted the vines through the ground and under the pavement, allowing the tendrils to burst forth from the sidewalk, twisting upward over several lampposts, turning them into trees in the process. Their habitation moved, The spirits in the store ambled their way out of the shop and into the newly grown trees. "Go in peace," Cora said, offering the benediction that completed the spirit-bending technique. She had not discorporated the vines, but made them more harmonious with the environment, so she felt the statement still counted. "Amazing," the shopkeeper said with quiet awe. "That was incredible, Avatar Cora. Thank you. Ah!" The shopkeeper jumped, startled by the glowing form of an elderly airbender that appeared between the two. "Cora, it's time. We're ready for you," said the apparition. "Thanks, Jinora," Cora replied, then turned toward the owner. "You're welcome, but I'm afraid I can't stay." A quick gesture closed the valves on the water tank, and another circular gesture summoned a gust of wind which propelled her airbender's glider staff to her hand. "Be there in 5, Jinora," she called out, before taking a running leap and taking off to fly toward Air Temple Island. Cora flew over the city and across Yue Bay, arrowing straight for the upper levels of the central air temple. Alighting on one of the balconies, she spun her glider staff to collapse it and stepped inside. Within the council chamber, the current White Lotus Masters had assembled at the arched table, as well as a few extra people. Notably, Hayashi Midori was among them, along with her bodyguard standing behind her. Cora set her glider staff by the open window and stepped forward. "All right, what have you got for me?" she opened without preamble. "It's as you suspected, Cora. Something major happened out in the outer galaxy, and whatever it was, its metaphysics rippled across the entirety of known space," Jinora replied from the center of the table. "You were just in the right place at the right time to both observe its after effects and take action in the spirit world." Cora nodded as she pulled up her own chair and sat down. "Right. Specifics?" "We think the epicenter of the disturbance was in the vicinity of, or perhaps even beyond, the boundaries of Black Hole Enigma X-21, stated Colonel Takemi Takuma of the Fire Nation Air Force, gesturing toward the computer display in the corner. A career pilot and former Tychonaut, she now headed the United Republic's Outer Galaxy Threat Assessment Team. As much as she appreciated the possibilities presented by the URN's alliance with Supang, it was leavened with a decent measure of caution with regard to the threats beyond. Whatever the cause, it was important enough to prompt a coordinated military response from several of the galaxy's major heavy hitters on extremely short notice," she continued. "Genom Corp Def and the Vindicator, CFMF Charlemagne, and the WDF Strategic Fleet's Concordia were all pulled from their usual duty sectors and ordered to X-21 immediately. They and several other vessels, including Griffin's Dagger Disc, arrived in the X-21 system 2 days before the incident. They must have known ahead of time that something big was about to go down and deployed accordingly. To help with whatever went on?" asked another of the masters, Captain Kiao of Dicho's International Disaster Response Agency. "We're still unsure on that score, but the amount of battle damage seen on the returning ships point towards a major fleet engagement, one unreported by the media." Takuma nodded to the White Lotus intern who was manning the computer terminal for the display. The image changed, showing starships that looked like they had been through the ringer. "Heavy enough that both the Vindicator and Concordia had to go into dry dock for repairs. Very few returned unscathed. Even the Autobot's Ark had some damage." Cora's eyebrows went up. "The Autobots went there too? Man, sounds like quite the party." "Since then, Supreme Commander Megazones resigned his commission and dropped off the grid. No surprise there," Takuma added with a roll of her eyes. "Admiral Hutchins has resigned as well, but he appears to be heading up a new initiative in New Avalon, something called the International Police Organization. Huh. How international is he talking? Minister Hayashi straightened up and raised her voice. Enough that my office and the Ministry of State have gotten invitations to consider joining. I know that several of the Seleucian and Crown Colony worlds have signed on immediately. The reaction from EarthGov has been mixed, she admitted. Cora snorted. Figures. What about from the Free Spacers and Genon Corporation? The Free Spacers look to have consolidated in the wake of this incident and are buying up construction materials. We're not sure what's going on there, Takuma replied. Genom's undergoing a reorganization and starting a new initiative to hire more people for Corp Def and to boost production on their smaller Star Destroyer classes as well as troop carriers. It doesn't seem to be purely military, though. There's some word that Genom's starting to look into high-energy physics work again. We're not sure just what they're developing, though they were a major player in refining the Metaspace drive system. I've read that they're looking to make a major rollout of Metaspace gates across the inner worlds, so they may be trying to make incident response faster, added Kiao. Also, just to add to the confusion, there was a small combined task force flotilla that formed up around Enigma X-21 after the lead ships arrived and vanished. Apparently none of them got the memo either. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten much out of them in the way of reports, and I don't think we'll be able to get much out of them face-to-face, not without looking suspicious, Takuma admitted. Okay, so that settles what happened after everything exploded. Cora nodded. Do we have any indications of what could have prompted the thing in the first place? We have two certain indicators that something strange had started happening 2.5 weeks before the incident. The first was the sudden destruction of Supreme Commander Megazone's office in downtown New Avalon, and his subsequent disappearance. We can't rule out abduction, but to be honest, the New Avalon police and WDF security were baffled as to what had happened. The rest of his inner circle didn't appear to be as concerned, considering his history. At least, nobody tripped any immediate red flags, reported Captain Kiao. The second is the more distressing one. Rinpoche Tianbao of the Air Commonwealth continued from where Kiao left off. Last Juyue, remember how all the weathermen were commenting on the sudden cold snap the equatorial cities were having? There were nods all around the room. Well, further investigation by myself and Professor Mosera, at this he nodded to said personage, revealed that it wasn't just limited to them. We had a worldwide drop in temperature. We just didn't think it strange at the time, because in such places as the North and South Water Tribes, the variation wasn't as noticeable. And that drop started 2.5 weeks before the incident, and didn't stop until after Cora did whatever she did in the spirit world. Cora chuckled. Well, it's nice to know I had some effect. But that's not all. This drop in temperatures was matched by a similar drop on Zipang, and once we saw that, we started checking other planets. Cora's brow furrowed. What are you saying here? Chan Bao leaned forward, his expression grave. Beginning Baiyue 26th, 271, there was a galactic drop in the mean temperatures of inhabited worlds. It didn't matter the type of planet. Even Tatooine experienced a drop. It doesn't appear to have raised any red flags, most likely since most people pay attention only to their local global temperatures. Okay. That's just screwy. Cora frowned. And things got back to normal after I did whatever it was that I actually did? Tian Bao nodded. That appears to be about the size of it. Again, the WDF and Genom have made no note about the occurrence. It seems to have been logged as a meteorological anomaly, if it's gotten noted at all. Not all planets are on the same seasonal cycles, after all. Cora took this on board, then nodded. What about Enigma X-21 itself? Is there anything strange about it, other than it being a huge gravitational anomaly that crushes everything too close to it? We've got reports from the WDF Science Division, the Royal Seleucian Navy, the Vulcan Science Academy, and the Stellar Physics Chair of the New Snowdonia Institute of Science, said Kensaburo Sato, from where he was consulting a stack of notes. Every one of them swears up, down, and sideways that Enigma X-21 is just your bog-standard stellar black hole in terms of actual physical effect. It isn't in a binary system where a partner star can provide any mass. The only thing strange about it is that its accretion disk and outflow jets radiate in the visible spectrum, not the X-ray. Oh, really? Here's a video from a Rigel Space Lines passenger liner that swung by the black hole on the Rigel Terminus route, dated 2 months ago. He nodded at the intern who was manning the display's controls, and a new image came up. They didn't actually linger there, but it's apparently a popular long-distance photograph opportunity for ships going that way. The video in question revealed a black void in space, surrounded by a wide and thin, twisting disk of energy that was endlessly spiraling into its depths. Equally visible were the jets launching energy outward from opposite sides, perpendicular to the accretion disk proper. As the disk spun slowly and the energy shot outwards, the whole thing shifted through a constant spectral flux, putting Korra in mind of the rainbows cast by waterfalls. Wow, I can see why. That's pretty, but... Korra tilted her head and squinted a bit at the image. Yes, Avatar? Inquired the representative from the Kyoshi Warriors, Captain Fenn, who sat nearby. I don't know. Apart from the whirlpool disk part, wouldn't you say that sort of looks like the spirit portals? I mean, the jets don't stay cohesive like the aurora projections from the portals, but... Korra, there's something else you should consider, Hayashi added. Yeah? We were able to get the Terminus sector charts ostensibly made by the crew of the Phoenix Queen. One of our pilots in New Avalon was able to get a copy from the local WDF Office of Stellar Cartography. She pulled up a paper packet, unfolding it on the table to reveal it as a recently printed sectional map. Suffice it to say, there are some anomalies. Korra got up from her seat to study the map, as did several of the White Lotus Masters. At first glance, the interlocking arrangement of grid squares, circles, arcs, and graded lines made no sense to the Avatar. But after a few moments' study, and with a quick glance at the legend in the corner, the whole affair began to make a strange sort of sense to her. She could pick out the major routes avoiding the notable anomalies bordering the Enigma side of the Terminus sector, the blocks of data denoting communications and station information that could provide succor to space travelers along the way. I'm no expert, but I get the distinct impression that either these guys are the galaxy's worst stellar cartographers, or this is some kind of a joke, said Korra, pointing to a handwritten note reading, "Here be dragons," next to an arrow pointing to X-21. Whoever this Sarah Inazuma person is, she's got very good brushmanship, commented the master from Piandao Academy. I could only wish my students had handwriting skills that advanced. We compared the map to earlier ones from different agencies, and there's a lot of overlap, Hayashi explained. It's pretty, but there are a lot of subtle breaks, a cartographic version of cut and paste. So basically, at this point, we're looking at a cover-up of some kind, Korra concluded as she returned to her seat. That's pretty much what it boils down to, Takemi replied. Not apparently a malicious one, but possibly one to prevent wide-scale panic. Which we somehow failed to avoid, thanks to our connections to the spirit world. Master Tenek, a sculptor and spiritualist from the Northern Water Tribe, pointed out. Yeah, Cora frowned. And because of those connections, we've had quite a bit of cleanup to do on both sides. Republic City's Department of Spirits have almost gotten all the vine overgrowth taken care of, so I don't need to poke my nose in too often anymore. She rolled her eyes. I checked both the northern and southern spirit portals at the poles. There's been some overgrowth there, too, but it hasn't impacted people as much because, well, they're in the middle of the ice on both ends. Spirits evacuated out of them when it happened, but they moved back in once they got the all clear. So what caused the vine growth? Asked Master Karima, the Anga cook of Korra's hometown of Senna. We haven't seen an upsurge in dark spirits lately. Cora shook her head. From what I can tell, it was a defensive survival mechanism. Looking deeper into the spirit world, there were actual die-offs of spirit life inside it. She grimaced, then continued on. Most ambulatory spirits were able to relocate, but a lot of the anchored stuff was affected. The spirit world was a lot closer to whatever happened, and it bore the brunt of the after-effects. Structures within got shaken up. Some of the human-built ones broke apart entirely. The spirit-made ones fared better, but there was still a lot of cleanup to do. Jianyu Beifang, the latest architect in a long line of Zhaofu Beifangs, nodded. My construction teams were deployed on Captain Kiao's order to repair the human way stations beyond the spirit portals once the assessment was made. We offered our help to any spirits who wanted it, too. Was Iroh all right? Asked Karima. And his tea shop? Cora nodded. He was with me when it happened. He helped a lot of folks get the word out and evacuate. Good. I'm glad. I'd have hated to have to cancel our tea and pie show dates. Karima replied with a fond, indulgent smile. Cora raised a curious eyebrow and then shook her head, dismissing whatever she was about to say from her mind. Jinora took the opportunity to speak up. There's something I'd like to add to that, Cora. Yeah? There was an upswing of revelatory dreams among the more spiritually aware around the time that this happened, mostly focused on either massive battles in the snow or disruptions of the spirit world proper. Huh. Cora blinked. I didn't get any of that. Probably because you were at the epicenter of what happened. A good number of people dreamed of you, but that's not quite the same thing. Jinora gave Cora an impish grin. Well, that's not disturbing at all, Cora dryly replied. You were awake the entire time, Avatar. It is not surprising that you would have missed out on the prophetic dreams experienced by others, unless you managed to sneak in a nap while no one was looking, Captain Fenn added. The stark markings of her Kyoshi warrior face paint making her arched eyebrow even more pronounced. Not even Kurik would have decided to have a nap during an unfolding spirit crisis, Cora grumbled. So no fears there. You are one of the most powerful spiritual entities in our world, Cora, if not the strongest, period, Jinora stated, as if to an airbending novice instead of the Avatar. It's only natural that your actions in the spirit world would affect people who were naturally receptive to these things. Okay, moving on. Cora shook her head. Has there been anything metaphysically weird out in the galaxy? There were a scattering of similar reports, but they mostly got lost in the tide of yellow journalism dismissals. We only knew to look ourselves because of our own world's proclivities, Jinora replied. What concerns me is that we may have had an upswing of Esper awakenings in the wake of this event. Hayashi continued, her face grave. We had a handful of spontaneous bending manifestations in Sipang from people who had bloodlines tracing back to Dicho immigrants, but who hadn't shown any affinity for the arts in grade school. They happened the day of the incident, and not a moment before. Well, that sounds familiar. Cora commented, with an agreeing nod from Jinora. The reason we're thinking this is that, according to reports, the timetable for getting EarthGov's PsyCore up and running has been accelerated, Colonel Takuma added. They'll be operational before the end of the year at this rate. She leaned forward in her seat. I've read some of the screening guidelines that my counterpart at the Zipang Ministry of Defense forwarded to me. It is not pleasant reading. But if you read between the lines, it's clear that they've been spooked. This event's pushed the telepath problem to the forefront of their minds. Well, that's just great, Cora grumbled. There's one other angle we haven't considered yet. Was there any insight from past avatars if you were able to contact them? Asked Master Tenek. A quick exchange of glances crossed around the room before all attention rested on Cora. They all knew the history of how, during harmonic convergence, the avatar had lost her connection to her past lives through Rava, the Light Spirit, and the legend of how sometime afterwards Cora had managed to regain those connections. She didn't talk often about that subject, as it was something of a sore point for her, but seeing as she didn't depend on her past lives' opinions, she was at least upfront about talking about them. That was one of the first things I did once the initial crisis passed, Cora admitted, and then sighed. Honestly, it was kind of muddled. A lot of the older ones I couldn't understand. The more recent ones tried dodging the question, citing the old, "Your era is different than ours. We don't have a clue what it was about," excuse, like Roku's pulled on occasion. Cora rolled her eyes. I ran it by Yangchen, but I don't know. If I didn't know better, I'd say she was drunk. Jinora blinked at this, while Fen allowed herself a slight, sarcastic smile. So, not nearly as helpful as you would have hoped, said the Kyoshi warrior. Cora nodded, her expression rueful. Pretty much. Aang was feeling pretty good about it, though, which is something, I suppose. And Kyoshi was feeling somewhat proud of whatever had happened. I know they all helped me when it happened, but it's one of those had-to-be-there things. I can't really put it into words. Rava had her own opinion, that this wasn't darkness but absence, that she was fully behind my doing something about it. Well, you've always been closest to her, so that stands to reason, Jinora pointed out, having recovered from her momentary befuddlement. I concur with Rava's evaluation of the situation, replied the woman standing over to the side in lab coat and multifaceted glasses, her multicolored moth wings beating and creating a refreshing breeze in the room. The weather in the spirit world was affected by the absence of energy and substance, not the corruption of it. It acted much like the black holes of the material world, a vacuum which consumed all the spirit energy before it. If it were not for the Avatar's actions, plus those she aided, no doubt the whole of the spirit world would have been consumed, and then the mortal world would soon follow. A moment of silence followed, as the humans in the room considered the moth spirit's words. It had not really sunk in until right then just how close they had been to everything ending for certain. Well then, I suppose once again we owe the fact of our survival to you, Avatar Korra, Captain Fen said, giving the Avatar a seated bow. Thank you. You're welcome, Cora replied, returning the bow. Right, so conclusions? She prompted, in order to get the meeting back on track. Colonel Takuma nodded. Something happened out in the galaxy, something unprecedented, that nevertheless went unnoticed by most of the galactic community. Those who did notice have kept the event and its outcome under wraps. From what we can tell, a sizable portion of the people involved live and work in New Avalon, in the Zeta Cygni Dyson Sphere. If we want to get to the bottom of this, our best chance for answers is there. So our best chance is for somebody to head out there and shake them down for answers. Somewhat crudely put, but correct, Avatar, Tenak replied. Korra nodded decisively. I'll do it. The spiritualist blinked. Wait, what? He stared at the Avatar in surprise, then looked at his fellow White Lotus Masters. A mix of expressions could be seen around the table, from an equal measure of surprise to his own, to mild disgruntlement, to long-suffering resignation, to quiet amusement. He could even see the head of Future Industries looking almost so proud as if to burst, tears gathering at the corners of his eyes. Avatar, you cannot be serious. Oh, but she can, replied Karima, her eyes crinkling as she smiled. You may have just risen to the inner circle, Tenak, but mark my words, this isn't the first time that our Avatar has led the charge. She exchanged a knowing nod with Jinora. Yes, and it won't be the first time my office will protest you doing this, Avatar Korra, Takuma replied. You know we have no idea what may happen if the worst-case scenario occurs in the Outer Galaxy. Korra rolled her eyes. We've already been over this, Takemi, and it's not like I haven't been careful taking risks out there before. You headbutted the leader of Clan Werelock! Korra snorted. Pfft, the guy had it coming to him, and the Erdnot Shaman had my back, and hey, it improved my standing with the overall ruler of the planet, so all to the good, eh? Avatar, we know you're eager to get out into the field again, added Fen. And honestly, I cannot blame you, she added, before Korra could protest. It's just... we've already invested all the time and effort with getting our agents into the field, performing all the information gathering already. Is there really a need for you to risk yourself as well? Seriously, Fen? You're taking this tack with me? Korra asked. Look, I know you mean well, but by now everybody who's been investigating will have been doing it long enough that I would not be surprised at all if the WDF and other agencies have started to put two and two together. The number of questions being asked by people about the same period of time has got to have raised a few red flags of their own. I know we route nearly everything through Zipang to keep it from coming back to us. At this, she nodded in acknowledgement to Hayashi. But this still means there's somebody who it can be traced back to. Unfortunately true, Korra, Hayashi admitted. I would advise having several of my people do a surgical information strike on New Avalon, but I suspect you would go ahead anyway, whether I sent them or not. No bet, murmured Jinora to Kenzaburo, who outright let out a small giggle as he nodded in agreement. Korra sat up straighter, addressing the assembled masters. Look, this was an unprecedented spiritual occurrence, one that could theoretically have put harmonic convergence to shame. Regardless of what you think of me personally, or my survival chances out there in the galaxy proper, it would be tremendously irresponsible of me to just sit on my ass here instead of doing my best to get to the bottom of what happened. Korra directed her stern gaze at Takuma, Fen, and Tenak, who drew back slightly at her intensity. I wouldn't be able to call myself the Avatar if I didn't. Exactly so, Jinora replied, giving her explicit approval for Korra's choice. I, for one, would not oppose Avatar Korra going out on her own investigative mission on behalf of the White Lotus. No surprise there, muttered Beifong under his breath before being slapped on the shoulder by the much older Kirima. Ow! Kiao sighed. This won't be a repeat of the Cybertron incident, will it? I still have nightmares from reading the damage report from your little excursion there with your new pal. Hey, Hot Rod was a perfect gentleman for a guy who turns into a futuristic sawtomobile, Cora replied with a grin. And hey, the damage could have been so much worse. Yes, that's what I'm still afraid of, Kyo deadpanned. So it's decided? Cora asked the group. We start making arrangements for me to head to New Avalon? Well, it wasn't exactly put to a vote, Fenn pointed out. But if you're so dead set on pursuing this path, we may as well support you as best we can. Grandma would be so proud, Kensaburo said with a grin. If you're entirely sure, Avatar, Takuma said with grudging acceptance, then my office will provide updated threat reports as soon as possible, just so you're well informed. Hey, go to one of the most populous cities in the galaxy, poke my nose in, try to make contact with one of the most polarizing figures of the current age out there, and ask him some pretty sharp questions. How hard can it be? Cora asked rhetorically. Jinora arched an eyebrow that nearly reached her arrow. I can never tell when you're being sarcastic, Cora. It's a talent, Jinora. Part 5. Footsteps on the Shore. Sintiyi, Wuyue 27, 272 ASC. Monday, May 27th, Standard Year 2391. Republic City, Dicho. Republic City Central Station had a long and storied history. Built in the early days of the city, it represented one of Aang and Fire Lord Zuko's hopes for increased communication and trade between the nascent Republic and the Earth Kingdom. It had birthed the first major passenger rail lines, weathered the disturbances of 170 and 171 ASC, became the principal hub of the cross-continental magna train network, and welcomed a resurgence of traffic once the Veil was discovered and rail traffic became a major player once more. Its architecture had the weight of decades upon it, built by people who, above all, hoped for connection with others, no matter the means. While the statue of a young Fire Lord Zuko stood out in the plaza, there was another small memorial plaque by the entrance. There, in brass Tongyu characters, stood the inscription, Republic City Central Station, Railway Station Renovation Project, Contractor, Future Industries, 171 to 174 ASC, Chief Architect and Engineer, Asami Sato. Cora smiled fondly and sadly as she hesitated by the entrance, rubbing her fingertips over the old embossed text. No words were said. Everything that was needed was already known in her heart. Besides, she had a train to catch, and if she was late, her memory of Asami would never let her hear the end of it. She shook her head, gave one last look at the plaque, and then went inside with her polar bear dog, Aga. Inside, Cora navigated the terminal concourse with practiced ease. Fellow passengers gave her a wide berth, partly because she was the Avatar, and partly because of the massive apex predator accompanying her to the departure platform. Within a few minutes, she and Aga had reached the waiting East Bao Sai Limited at the Zipang platform, and she waved to the group of people gathered by one of the passenger cars. Ha! I told you she'd get here on time, stated Master Iki to her older sister, Jinora. I never doubted you, Iki, replied Jinora calmly, and then nodded to Cora as they arrived. Hello, Cora. Aga. Hey, you two, Cora replied, hugging both women. Here to see me off? Of course, said the Grandmaster of the White Lotus, bowing slightly to Cora. Chung here has your finalized documentation for the Outer Galaxy. Zipang passport, medical insurance, credit chits, bank card, account information, network drop points, and calling card preloaded with the numbers of the Zipong embassies you might need to contact us," the White Lotus member said as he handed the papers across. Cora grinned as she accepted the diplomatic packet. "Thanks. This'll help me a lot." She turned and hauled her duffel bag off of Aga's harness and unzipped it, stuffing the last bundle inside before closing and shouldering it. "Sure you've got everything, Cora? You didn't forget your seal jerky again?" asked Iki impishly. Cora rolled her eyes. "Yes, Iki, I've got my seal jerky," she said, patting the side of her duffel. "And I'll be sure to ration it this time." "Good, good. I don't want to have to fly down to the Little Water Tribe district and have to order another packet to forward to you across the galaxy. The look that one butcher gave me when I tried to buy some. I'm an air nomad, I'm a vegetarian. That doesn't mean I can't pick up some meat for my friends." Iki let out an annoyed huff. "But I thought you liked people giving you looks," Jinora commented. "Yes, but Tianbao's different. And I'm married to him." Cora shook her head, chuckling. "You too. Come here," she said, opening her arms. The two aged airbending masters knew their cue when they saw it, and stepped forward to embrace their dear friend and adopted sister in a three-way hug. "Stay safe, Cora," Jinora murmured. "I don't know if I can promise that, Jinora," Cora admitted. "Will stay alive do?" Jinora smiled fondly. "Yes, that it will. Oh, and Iki, could you do something for me?" "Anything, unless it's your taxes." "I don't do taxes. The White Lotus does them for me." Iki snorted. "Which thrills them immensely, you know," she said with a sidelong glance at Chiang. "Seriously, though." "Yeah, yeah," Cora replied, letting go of the two women. "Could you look after Aga for me while I'm gone? I don't want her to get lonely." "Oh, of course." Iki smiled over at the patiently waiting polar bear dog. "As long as she doesn't get it into her head to try and climb the temple like her old man," she said with a pointed glare. Aga gave her best deadpan look, but her wagging tail betrayed her. Cora laughed and ruffled Aga behind the ears. "Oh, you," she said, leaning in close. "Play nice with Iki, will you? She's getting on in years," she confided to her animal companion with a sideways glance toward the airbender. Iki stuck out her tongue in protest to the allusion to her age, and then relented, laughing. Just then, the shrill whistle of the train cut across the platform. A conductor called out, "5 minutes to final boarding call." "Right, there's my cue." Cora smiled at the three humans and one polar bear dog. "I'll see you all when I get back. And don't worry, I'll send plenty of letters," she added with a cockeyed grin. "You better," replied Iki. "I know you will," Jinora added, before giving her spiritual student an airbender bow. "Safe journeys, Cora. May the wind always be at your back." Cora returned the gesture with a Water Tribe bow of her own. "Thank you, Jinora. May your shores and harbors be calm while I'm away." "They'd better. I'm getting old, too," Jinora murmured, before standing and smiling. "Now go and run off, you whippersnapper." Cora laughed and waved to the four before turning and running up to the passenger car entrance. Showing the ticket to the conductor, she was quickly admitted and vanished from view. As the four watched the train power up and begin to move away from the platform, one of the side windows of the passenger car opened, and Cora stuck her head and shoulders out. Before the conductors could call her inside, Cora waved and called back, "See you on the shoreline!" Avery Productions Unlimited and Magnetic Terrapin Studios presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, The Legacy of Korra, Book 5, Veil, Epilogue, A New Galactic Age. Book 5, Veil, is concluded, but The Legacy of Korra continues with Book 6, Galaxy.